Welcome back to the Back Pain and Injury Podcast. I'm delighted to welcome today Ian Gatt to talk about all things tennis and golfer's elbow. Conditions I'm sure many people listening will have heard of, but may need to be a little bit more familiar with what exactly they are. Now, Ian is a highly experienced physiotherapist and upper limb specialist. He has a keen interest in working with professional boxers as well as many other professional athletes. He's also a published author and very experienced lecturer. He clearly knows his elbows inside and out and is the absolute perfect guest to chat all things tennis and golfer's elbow. So before we jump in, as a reminder, if you are struggling with pain and need someone to help you, head on over to thebackpainpodcast.com, where you can use our directory, pop in your postcode, and find someone tried and tested by us who is local to you to help you with your injury. All you have to do is put in your postcode, and you'll get a list of providers close to you that you know are trusted to give you the best care possible. But that's it from me. I'll leave you in the very capable hands of Ian Gatt.
Welcome to the Back Pain Podcast with Rob and Dave, the only show geared specifically to help educate you about your back pain. We talk to the experts to bust the myths, break down the science, and give you all the top tips for living pain-free. So, if you're driving to work, tidying the house, or even laid up at home in pain, we have something for everyone. Right then, Ian. So, talk to us. What actually is tennis elbow?
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one because when people think about tennis elbow, they immediately think about tennis, which in a way, the correct thing is something to do with something repetitive. I think the myth is you get a tennis elbow only playing tennis. In fact, probably you might get it more playing golf. And then on the opposite side, there's golfer's elbow, where sometimes the opposites can happen more when you're playing tennis. So it depends. But basically, what is it? It's something that is affecting a tendon. That's what we know. And it's something which is going to impact on your daily activities. So basically, it's something that's going to bother you.
Mm. So that's the same for golfers as well, then. You said it's not necessarily from purely golf or from purely tennis. It's just that's a common cause, or is that how it used to be thought of?
Yeah, I think obviously there was a time when, you know, used to maybe be seen a bit more in those sporting athletes. I think that was the focus. But really, you tend to see it. You tend to see it in athletes and manual laborers or anybody really who's doing something of a repetitive nature, which could be on a long scale, you know, on a chronic sort of spectrum. However, again, that's the myth really that, you know, unless you're doing that sort of activity on a long period of time, then you're fine. But a lot of times we need to think about when somebody gets it acutely, as in the now, and it's maybe because certain activities they have done recently that is actually very repetitive. So when we talk about manual labor, it doesn't just mean that's your job. It could be something you have done. And we obviously have seen a lot of people doing lots of DIY or having to do lots of repetitive things during lockdown, for example. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be many people out there that potentially have had these weird and wonderful symptoms around their elbows and thinking, what is this? And they're probably being told it's a tennis elbow or a golfer's elbow and probably unsure what that means.
Mm. So how does this present, Ian? How do we know it's not just, some other type of elbow pain? If we go to tennis elbow first, how is that typically going to present or show itself up?
Well, typically, you don't consider a mechanism of injury as you've done something and you've sprained something. So you've not fallen on your elbow, you've not sort of lifted something heavy and you went, ouch. Although you could irritate the tendons. But with those sort of things, you're thinking more ligaments or joints, for example. So how does it present? You have pain, tends to be a bit more local. So, you know, if it's around the elbow, tends to be close to the bony points on the outer side, the outer side being on the side where your thumb is, to try and be a bit more sort of anatomical correct. But obviously, we're considering the elbow. It's painful, and the pain may vary. It may impact on your gripping activities, which means grabbing something. But also when we say gripping activities, it might be grabbing something and lifting it towards you, for example, or lifting it away from you. So you could be lifting the shopping bag suddenly, oh, that's painful, or doing something in that capacity. But it's something that's suddenly affecting you and you're thinking, what's going on over there?
So what's going on underneath the surface? We've had this irritation, something repetitive that we've either just started doing or perhaps increased our load on that. What's actually happening under the surface to cause this pain?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of times, although there's pain, there might be not a lot or a lot going underneath. So if we think about certain terminology which are used, which is probably useful to know, there are four really. One is tendinitis, and itis meaning inflammation. There's tendinosis, osis meaning degeneration usually. You also have, not so much at the elbows, but it's good for people to know because there are different tendons around the body. You could have the para tendinitis and para tendinosis, which also, that could be the sheet surrounding the tendon, which can get inflamed or gets irritated. And I think it's useful because, you know, not every tendon is the same. That's why we use the terminology a tendinopathy rather than an itis or an osis. Now, people out there are thinking, yeah, what does that mean anyway? Well, a tendinitis is usually an inflammation around the tendon. And we tend to see it usually, for example, you typically don't do a lot of strenuous work, but maybe you had a full weekend of doing a lot of work 3 days after each other, and suddenly you get this pain very localized around that tendon region. And to me, the problem isn't that you have the pain now, it's what you do after. So if you give it a little breather, that probably will just resolve on its own if you just chill, basically. So you give it a little break, even if it's 1 or 2 days, and you can crack on. But if you keep pushing on it, you might make it worse and make it a bit of a headache then to resolve. Because a lot of these itis, they tend to sort of resolve very nicely on their own if you're aware about it and thinking, you know, rather than just going to push through it. And this includes also people in the gyms where sometimes they think, I'll just push a bit more. You know, my trainer told me no pain, no gain. There'll be lots of loss of gain if you keep pushing through that type of pain. But then sometimes you get the osis. The osis is you get a degeneration of the tendons that can happen under the hood. And it's quite interesting because you don't necessarily have pain because of the degeneration. But sometimes you can get some associated inflammations that can occur. And because of that, you get the pain. And so when you have a scan and somebody's telling you what's happening under the hood, it might not necessarily correlate with the symptoms you're getting. Now, we're being very specific here, but there's also a myriad of other conditions that can either masquerade as this or equally. We use the word concomitant. It's a very fancy word. We like fancy words in medicine. They can be associated. So there could be something else together which possibly could be predisposing to this and leading to this.
So in that case, you can have a... I've got to wrap my head around this now. You can have a tendinopathy. No, sorry. You can have a tendinosis without a tendinitis. And you can have a tendinitis without a tendinosis. But... essentially, one can become the other. So you could have a degenerative irritation that becomes inflammatory, but you could also have an inflammation that comes purely from overuse, so without any background previous issues. Is that right?
Yeah, because, I mean, tendons don't have very good blood supply. And because of that also, they have, you know, from a pain point of view, they don't really get that sort of element of pain as much as other structures. But, you know, on a chronic basis, you could have some form of degeneration, which has been studied under the microscope, you know, in many studies, and you might be fine. And then suddenly you start getting these, they call them neovessels, new vessels that start growing. Imagine like planting a tree and something starts to grow. But it's not a nice blade. It's more like a bush, a thorn bush, because these new circulations bring circulation, but circulation here is not the right circulation because it brings the naughties with them. You know, we call them P substances, and there's other names, but they're very long and complicated, so I'm not going to bore people, but basically brings pain with it. So suddenly you have these you know, things going on. And hence why even when we talk about sometimes the way we approach these, manage these, which we'll talk a bit later, it may be how we try and influence pain really, is by actually having pain while doing these activities. So it's, you know, the more we understand what's happening under the hood sometimes, it's useful. But as I said, there are other things we need to consider.
As healthcare professionals, we know how important medical imaging can be for diagnosing and treating patients. But if you want to book a scan for yourself, navigating waiting times, costs and admin can be daunting. Scan.com are here to help you. They are the UK's largest diagnostic imaging platform with a network of over 160 imaging centres to choose from, making scans more accessible, faster and more affordable. Included in their pricing is telephone consultations pre and post scan, alongside a readable report explaining the findings to you without the medical jargon. Visit the scan.com website to find out more.
So we've got the difference between a tendinosis and a tendinitis. Is that covered umbrella by tennis and golfer's elbow? Can both of those be within that diagnosis?
Yes, and I think, you know, again, even for people listening, not to get confused, rather than getting too much confused about the terminology of the itis and the osis, I think more about chronology is important here. You know, if you have somebody who's never had an issue there and suddenly starts having symptoms there, you know, that's where you need to rest it. Then we need to give it a breather, give it a couple of days, let it calm down and let it go on again. You know, the more you can give it a little breather, the better. Now, I'm not saying it's not the same if you're somebody who tends to get it regularly, but by then, there might be a different element of pathology there, which is more instated, and you might have a different approach. Probably equally there, you need to sort of let it calm down. So it's not that it's completely different, but I think if you've never had it and it's the first time you have it, just by being a bit more ultra careful, you may stop this cascade that, you know, six months, a year down the line, you're still complaining about it just because you spent an extra week really pushing hard on it. And that's usually what happens. So I think it's more about focusing on that chronology. But yes, you could have both on the outside and the inside of the elbow. So, you know, the classic tennis and golfer's elbow. It can be either inflammatorily with no degeneration, or you could have degeneration with no inflammation, or you could have degeneration with some inflammation. But what people are probably most bothered about is how much pain it has and how much it's affecting me day to day, more than what's really happening under hood. And I think it's important to think sometimes we could overcomplicate it even for ourselves as clinicians and thinking too much about what's happening under the hood and not understanding the story that's being presented in front of us.
So we talked about the similarities there between kind of golfer's elbow and tennis elbow. Besides the location, i.e. tennis elbow being on the outside and golfer's elbow kind of being on the inside of the elbow, do they present in quite a similar manner besides that? You mentioned kind of the gripping and the picking things up and those type of movements. Are they, you know, very similar in that respect?
In a way, yes. I think it's a lot around the function that you're doing with the hands and wrists and the elbows. There's an element of repetition that's happened. And equally, if you think about some of the structures that sometimes can masquerade or complement to the symptoms, very equally, you've got things like joint, where you could be thinking about some underlying bone element or cartilage, which can either be the real problem rather than the actual tendon, or could be driving the tendon because there's something going on there. You could also have the ligaments. So you could have on the outside and the inside of the elbows, you've got ligaments that try and stabilize. And particularly in athletes, if you have, you know, injured those ligaments due to repetitive trauma or maybe an acute trauma where you've maybe torn it and you know it's torn, you can imagine the tendons on both sides are trying to do the job suddenly to hold things in place. So, you know, those tendons might be, get a bit angry because they're trying to do the job of what they tend to do normally, and also the ligament, who now is a bit on holiday because it's not doing the job. there could be potentially some things going on with the nerves also. So, you know, in the area, you can have nerves that can get trapped sometimes. You know, there are tunnels where the nerves pass by and these people can get trapped. It's about like driving your car and suddenly you get blocked in a tunnel. Never nice, is it? Nice and dark. You're thinking, am I ever going to get out of this one? And that's probably what the nerves are thinking. And so you could have local symptoms. You could have symptoms going further down. So it's always important to understand what we call the nature of the symptoms. What do they feel like? How do they respond? You could have some symptoms coming from your neck also. You know, sometimes if you're a long sufferer of neck problems, or maybe you don't really get neck problems, but there's something there, I'd definitely put a red flag if you're getting, you know, on both sides, you're getting those symptoms. Now, you could have bilateral local, but usually we tend to say when you have bilateral symptoms, i.e. on both sides, your left and right side, always good to see what's going on centrally, because, you know, you need to understand what's going on and what is the history. And I think when you're putting it all together also, it's very important to understand the general and underlying health of the person, because there'll be a lot of people that are thinking, oh, well, if I'm not an athlete, then I'm not going to get it. And if I'm not somebody who does repetitive things a lot, I'm not going to get it. But beyond the mechanisms, sometimes there's an underlying health issue that could be triggering things. So, for example, are you somebody that's been on high doses of certain antibiotics that you've had to have for different reasons, that sometimes can impact the quality of the tendon? And even with less activities, you might get symptoms locally. Are you somebody with what we class as metabolic disorders or metabolic underlying things? So, you know, do you know you've got gout, for example, or some thyroid issues? Do you have increased cholesterol? And maybe the drugs you're using to reduce the cholesterol can impact the quality of the tendons. Do you use also things like, you know, again, with drugs or the general conditions for, you know, hypertension? Do you know you're diabetic, for example? And, you know, so there's a myriad of things that we could, you know, go on a whole list that potentially could be impacting or predisposing, you know, as a risk to tendons. So, you know, when you say, for example, who can get it, you know, we always have to think about the myriad of things. The other thing I'd say also, if you're somebody who has been diagnosed before as having tennis or golfer's elbow, and you've gone through the last few years of getting injections regularly, and typically I know people will have injections every 12 weeks because that's when the lifeline runs out of these steroids. If you have too many of these, we know already that it might not fare well in the long term. And I know we'll talk a bit more about management, but also can predispose to these degenerative tears. And so you might get yourself in a position where you are making things worse down the line. So again, it's looking at the history. Have you had it before? And if you had it before, what have you done before for it? If you're having any drugs for anything, do you have any underlying health conditions you're aware of? I think it's important when you're thinking about those symptoms, are you a person who tends to have any of these which could be linked?
And I guess that really cements the need for a really thorough medical history and thorough medical examination to ask all these comorbidity questions and do a full kind of systems review. But, you know, ignoring that to some degree from our perspective, are there any sports or populations which are more likely at risk? You know, is this something which affects on the whole older people? Is it more athletes and there's certain sports that are predisposed to it? I know you, obviously they have sports named after them, tennis and golfers, but actually you said it can be the other way around. So, you know, is there something there that, you know, does lean itself towards more of a bias within certain populations?
No, I think, you know, when you look at it really, I mean, you're going to find confounding information, but relatively the man and females will get it equally, really. You could have certain places where you can have men more than women, other places women more than men, but typically they're quite equal. I think if you're looking at sports that have a repetitive nature, and it could be things like, you know, it could be a rower, who's doing things where he's grabbing onto something and pulling against himself. It could be, as you said yourself already, tennis golfs. Yeah, you could get them, and not necessarily in the places where they're named after. And sometimes you can get both on both sides. So it could happen. You could have it on both sides at the same time. So, you know, not to discount that. But also you could be getting it in somebody like, I don't know, javelin thrower, for example, who's throwing things repetitively. And as we said before, is it because the ligaments have become injured and it's driving the tendon, or it's the tendon itself that's become injured? So thinking about typically what you'd expect. But again, you could be somebody in the office just clicking away at the clicker, and the way you are moving and the amount of things you do, particularly I go back to lockdown where people have done more at the computer than before. There's more flexibility now where people work more from home than before, at least in some organizations. You might find yourself that it doesn't need to be hard and effort. It could be those things. In fact, interestingly, some studies have also shown certain links with psychological factors. So, for example, your coping strategies, your mental state. And I think, you know, I don't want to go excessively into it, but, there are differences also between male and females, for example. So males, some studies have shown that if you're somebody who is doing too much, overworked, potentially, it could be affect their mental status and could be a factor linked, potential, with tendon problems like tennis elbow. And with females, it's not so much the too much work. It's actually the coping strategy. Can they cope with it? So it's quite an interesting thing. It seems like it's the same, but it's more about, you know, somebody seeing that there's a lot going on and the other person is, I can't cope with what I'm doing. And the coping sometimes is not about the workload. It could be the environment. It's how they feel, how they fit in the environment. So I think it's always important to understand also, you know, with the things you're doing, it's not just a physical manifestation sometimes. It could be elements linked to your general well-being. How do you feel as a person? Which for me is very interesting to understand.
Mm. Absolutely. Ian, so I've come to see you or another professional and I've got this pain in my arm. How is it diagnosed? Do I need a scan? Do I need special tests? Is it prodding and poking? How is it that this is going to be diagnosed and ruled in or out?
Yeah, we always say that the history is the most important thing. So all the things we've talked about now, I think, you know, having a dialogue, having a conversation is the best thing before putting my dirty paws on anybody, because everybody seems to like to poke and prod. And I think it's the last thing people should be doing. The next thing I'd like to know is how much it's affecting them on day-to-day activities. You know, they can rate themselves. There doesn't need to be a number really or anything here. It's just understanding what is their abilities, how much is impaired. You know, is this something that sounds like it's only a small percentage, but maybe means a lot to them? Is it something which is affecting them massively? So, you know, are we looking at somebody who's struggling to do anything? They're struggling to even, you know, they wake up in the morning, they can't even grab a cup of coffee or tea, depends what they like. And I think that's very important because, you know, before we start doing any form of testing, we need to understand how they feel about it, what's the ailment. And then from there, I try to do some tests that try and get me to understand, and hopefully also the person in front of me, how much what they think it is, how much it's affecting. So the reason I say this is sometimes a lot of people come with beliefs made by other people, like, yes, this is a bad thing you've got, and yeah, you're going to struggle for a long period of time, or it's weak. And, you know, they get labeled with all these things, and you're walking around with all these labels thinking I've got a weak arm, I can't use it, I shouldn't use it. And so I use simple tests, you know, some tests which are nicely validated. You could use a hand grip dynamometer, which is a device where you can squeeze and see the number you get. And studies have shown us that you could see differences between an elbow flexed and an elbow extended, could see differences between doing it with a thumb up and the thumb pointing towards each other, for example. We call it, you know, palm down position, really, pronated, for those of us who like the scientific word, or palms up position. And so because of the knowledge of where I'd expect those differences, I try and get the function of the person. I see what they can and can't do. And then there are also certain tests which you can do. You know, you can resist certain parts of the body and see whether it elicits any pain. And what I'm trying to do, really, a lot of people try and chase a diagnosis. I try and use a formula, which I like to use, which I use also when I'm teaching on my courses, is prognosis, which equals diagnosis plus function. And why am I saying this? Is because although we might be chasing a diagnosis, sometimes because things may be associated or a bit still unsure, you know, because you have to be careful in saying, oh, it's definitely a tennis elbow, which is the first thing some people say in 2 seconds of somebody speaking to them, which I think is very dangerous, is to understand the function of the person. And the more I can understand the function, the more it adds to my equation of understanding how good or lesser good somebody's going to fare. And then I'm vetting the diagnosis. You know, again, I'm ruling down and narrowing down things anyway. So basically, obviously, the better I get a diagnosis, the better it helps me. But you know what? Even if I feel a bit stuck or unsure, I've got all the functional measures I've done. And together we can work out what they can do at this stage, which I think is more powerful than telling somebody, oh, you got a tennis elbow, you should be resting it for 3 weeks. And you're like, where does that come from? What are you using that basis for? Why not 2 weeks? Why not 6 months? You know, what are we using as a measure to understand how much somebody can do now, how much they need to be doing, and then do this gap analysis like they do in business. And if you do a good gap analysis, you can understand how much somebody can do now, in the next few weeks, in the next months, and so on. So somebody asked me, can I do this activity? It's easier for me to tell them, yes, you can do this activity or not. And it's the same principles I use with my athletes in sports. So whether you're somebody who's not in sport, whether you're an 18-year-old, whether you're a 99-year-old, it don't matter. We just need to understand what somebody can and can't do and focus on the can and sort of focusing on the can't.
Excellent. So we've come to our diagnosis. We've not chased it, but we've gently landed on our diagnosis or thereabouts. How do we start treating? Now, when I say treating, of course, I don't just mean hands-on, Ian. How do we start getting that person feeling better?
Yeah, so I think from the moment we've approached this, and that's why I'm going to change that word again from diagnosis to prognosis, is a lot of times because people are a bit fearful of what it is, of what it could be, who knows what they've read or been told so far. I think the first thing is explaining what we've found today so far, you know, what we think it could be. It could be this or it could be this other few things, but hopefully it's in a spectrum of safety, which would be nice. Hopefully we found good function. And by explaining all that already, we're starting to inform. I don't even like to use the word educate because sometimes people think it's condescending really on people that you're trying to educate. I'm just trying to inform. Look, this is what you've come with and this is what we've found. Now, these are the different things we could consider. And there's a myriad of things. And again, that's why I don't like to use the word treat even. It's how can we help somebody recover? How can we facilitate things? How can we help manage this area better? And so you can informing of, you know, how do you deload and reload in a safe way? How can you provide exercise if they need exercise? Not everybody needs exercise. Some people need actually not to do anything and just leave it chill, like the tendonitis we talked in the beginning. I think if you start hammering it too much, you might make it worse. So that's the information that comes is important. Are they on any medication or do they need any medication? Again, you know, it's a discussion to be had. Do they need any adjuncts? Adjuncts could be, do they need any supporting adjuncts like braces or splints, because at the current moment, it's too painful to do anything. So we need to give it a little breather for a little bit and then get another crack at it. Do I want to do hands-on? Well, you see, that's the last thing I want to be doing. That's why I like to call them adjuncts also. So if we can manage somebody without putting the hands on, better, because I don't want to see people very often. They don't want to see me. I'm sure it's very mutual. So the more that we can give them a management package, the better it is. And if you have to do hands-on, there must be a good justification as to why. What's the rationale? What are you trying to achieve there that somebody can't do on its own? Especially for something that potentially can get better on its own over a period of time. You know, research shows that between 6 to 12 months, it could get better, could resolve on its own. So all we're doing here is other things just to point it in the right direction and help it. I'm not saying, by the way, it's going to take 6 to 12 months for everybody. Hopefully most people can get better much quicker than that with the right approach.
So the other thing that people ask us a lot about of this is with adjuncts to treatment is steroid injection. Now, some people say that's kind of fallen out of favor recently. Is that right? You know, do we still use steroid injections for these really stubborn cases? Or again, is it something which we really shouldn't be using?
Well, I mean, if you use steroid, can you get an immediate and very good effect, and hence why it feels fantastic? Yes, you know, it's like, you know, having a super juice put in your tendon, and sometimes you have a fantastic result. The problem is, though, you're not having an impact on the why. Why is this tendon becoming a problem? And what people have is, you know, you have this quick fix, and you keep doing the things which you were doing before because you've had the quick fix. And as a result of that, eventually the juice wears out. Typically, studies have shown that between 8 to 12 weeks, it starts wearing off. And then, oops, it's come again. And then you go, is it time for another injection? If you have injections, it shows in the long term, your prognosis becomes less favorable than actually doing nothing, than injecting. So it's the short versus the long-term approach. Tendons can give lots of problems also. You know, you can have discoloration of skins, pigmentations, tearing of tendons, calcifications of bony areas around the tendon. So you can actually induce more problems than there ever was before. So should we be using tendons? I think tendons should be, injections should be resolved for, you know, a very small case of people. You know, if you're an athlete and you're knocking on a competition a few weeks out and there's no time to have an effect and it's been appropriately discussed, and it's an informed decision, okay? But make sure that we know what you're going to do after that competition, or even between now and then, is there anything you can start gearing towards? If it's your general population, is understanding what else might be going on. So, you know, a lot of times the tendon isn't the problem. The problem could be how, as a position, you're putting yourself to do certain things. So, for example, if you're doing certain things and you've got a very narrow base of support with your legs and you can't use your legs properly and you have to reach out a lot in a very extended elbow position, example, you're painting, that can give you lots of problems. So can you alter your position of your legs to use those legs a bit better, to generate better force and put less stress on the elbows? Can you use your shoulder a bit better? Have you had any shoulder problems before? And maybe that's the reason why you're having these elbow problems. It's not uncommon. So again, we use a fancy word, which is the kinetic chain. But, you know, do we know how somebody's doing things? It's not necessary you've got a weak kinetic chain, because I know a lot of people just go, oh, you got a weak kinetic chain, you need to strengthen your core. And I go like, palm in my face straight away. You know, hopefully not everybody in the world has a weak core. So when somebody tells you they have a weak core, please reply to them, maybe mine is stronger than yours. That should be the appropriate PC reply. I've got less PC replies for that. but a lot of times it's how you use it, because if you're not using your body in a certain way, then you can imagine that you're not using the maximum availability of the rest of your body, because you can generate 80% of your force from the rest of the body. The elbow has a very small component to an activity you could be doing. So it's very important that, you know, when you're looking at yourself, it's not posture, not posture we're talking about, it's technique. It is actually the technique you're using. And the technique you use could actually influence an injury. The repetition of it can influence your injury. I'm not saying I'm going to come and tell you what is the best technique, but if you're showing me something and I can see you're not using your legs properly, I'd say, well, that's probably not a good technique because surely you can use your legs a bit better. And I know from experience, because I have done certain things. I live in the countryside. I'm all the time chopping and doing things with trees and DIY. And I do lots of activities which involve myself. And I can see the difference between when I don't use my body well, so I'll call it a poor technique, versus a better technique where I can use the rest of the body better. And so for me, it's balancing. And when I feel certain symptoms, that's a little alarm bell telling me you've done it wrongly because my tendon is telling me I've done it wrongly.
So that was actually, that kind of answered my next question, which was going to be about prevention, which was whether it's working with athletes and working with, you know, I said non-athletes, you know, kind of lay persons, if we call them that, sounds like a horrible term, but people who aren't professional athletes, that prevention. So is that if someone comes to you and says, you know, my colleague, my friend, my, you know, fellow boxer has got this, how can I stop myself getting this or stop myself at risk for doing that? Is that the same conversation you have with them? You look at technique, you look at where people are overreaching, doing things that, you know, potentially puts more strain on that tendon. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd be very, very surprised somebody walks in to see me just to get a bit of a education package. So I think what you guys are doing is really great because it's all about spreading the word to the wider masses. I think the main thing is, can you prevent an injury? Probably not. It's very hard because a lot of times, you know, as you're trying to prevent one thing, something else crops up. You know, they're like bad weeds on the patio that you keep chasing to try and get rid of. But what can you do is, if you know a bit more about it, so, okay, I've done something. Can I put myself in a better position? Can I give myself a breather? You know, if I have to do something, does it have to be over a one weekend? Can I do it over 2 weekends, spread it out? Oh, that's a bit better. Do I have to leave things till the last minute to write my assignment? And now I'm spending a whole week, which is worth 6 months of work in 1 week. So if you're trying to do too much too soon, that's going to bite you. But sometimes it's not about the too much too soon only, because it's about how you recover after. So if you've done too much too soon and you can give yourself a good breather before you go again, that might stop the cascade. So just because you have a bit of symptoms, it's not the problem. The problem of those symptoms remain. And it's usually if you have the symptoms and you've managed to take a little step back and let things settle, then you might be fine. A lot of people, though, what do? They tend to feel the symptoms. They keep pushing through it. They keep persevering. They hope this pain is just going to go away. But you can't just hope for it to go away. You have to be proactive about it. Proactive means you have to tweak. Now, when I say rest, it doesn't mean you have to do nothing. But you have to remember that it's the things with high intensity. And it might have been certain positions which aggravated it. So can you do things where, you know, the intensity is lesser? Or maybe the repetition is lesser, or maybe you don't need to use your hands as much as you can use the rest of the body better. So, you know, it's sometimes about changing certain things. So, you know, if you were, you know, give an example, if you were painting the ceiling and you weren't using your legs effectively and you were having a proper go and now starting to get achy, okay, can I miss tomorrow? And instead of doing the ceiling, maybe I do things which are a bit closer to the ground and see whether even by changing the grip, the hand or whatever, maybe that feels better. Okay, it's not too achy there. And then see if you can go 2 days later or 3 days later. In the meantime, it's dried up. So it's trying to balance those things. So the prevention for me here is if you're feeling something there, just listen to your body a bit. If you are in the gym and you're doing a million pull-ups because you're trying to go to the beach and you're preparing for it and it's starting to get achy, particularly on the inside, for example, your golfer's elbow, if we like to call it so, because a lot of times happens with your underarm grip when you're doing lots of pull-ups. And maybe your lats aren't as big as you thought they were in the gym and you're using more your arms. Maybe you need to give yourself a little breather. Your lats aren't as big as you thought, and you have to maybe balance it out. So it's all about, you know, it's like when you eat, is it? You know, if you eat too much in one day and you try and eat again too much the following day, you're going to have a bit of a bad indigestion or a bad hangover if people don't want to use the analogy of alcohol. So it's about regulating. It's about regulating. I'm not saying that you don't do what you have to do, but if you feel something, you know, you've hit your threshold. Not everybody has the same threshold. So again, you can't compare one person to another by saying, you can't do that, you can't do that. All you can check is this something you typically do? Is it something you are accustomed to doing? Is your body accustomed to doing those things? I mean, if people look at the moment, there are ultra marathon runners doing massive amount of miles every day over long periods of times, and they don't get problems in their tendinopathies in the lower limb, just to use an example. Why? Because they're accustomed to it. And the body is aware of what they do and has regulated. But a lot of times, some people are not as regulated.
I love that. I think that, you know, it's a really nice message to finish on. Exactly that is kind of do what you are good at, you know, and not overloading it too much too soon. And I think that would solve an awful lot of problems if people didn't kind of, you know, go really hard straight away on day one, which I'm sure we've all been guilty of some way, shape or form, whether that's inking, drinking, exercise or eating. We've probably all been guilty of that in some way, shape or form over our many decades that we've been on this earth. So Ian, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I'd love to know where people can go to find out a little bit more about you. I know you teach courses, I know you also, you know, see patients. So where can people go to find out more about your kind self?
Yeah, you can find me on the three main social medias, I'll call them so. So your Instagram, where you can find me under Ian Gat Gatman, basically all under the boxing physio, really. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn also. And actually, on all of my profiles, there's a link to all the courses, which I'm currently working on and updating. So any in-person courses, any webinars, any online courses, and also adding resources. So hopefully, you know, there'll be more even as we keep on adding. But, you know, not just for practitioners, but obviously even for the general public, because I know a lot of people tend to want to learn more about different parts of the upper limb.
Brilliant. Ian, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for everyone listening, and we will catch you on the next episode of the Back Pain and Injury Podcast. That's it from me. Over and out.